I'd like to take 30 seconds of my allotted time to apologize for my blunder and mistake, and I think I must have hit the hall of whatever for being probably the only guy.
The declaration was fine, and I was close. So please proceed.
Thank you very much. The other thing I'd like to say is with regard to this case, I think what I'll do is just kind of, you know the factual outline of this. Two things, I think the main thing that I think that the court would be, my view is the granting of the jury instruction in this case. What I had found was that there was a mistake of fact instruction that the court should have given in this case, given the facts and circumstances. Now, this was a case that would involve promoting a dangerous drug in the third degree along with the paraphernalia. And I think what distinguishes this particular case from in the PDD3 case is that the drugs were actually contained in the pipe. So this was not a circumstance where the law enforcement had discovered a packet of contraband so that someone could not necessarily say, gee, I didn't know that I had it, or that I didn't know that I was intending to use it. This case involves the paraphernalia. And as I read through the case in, and it's somewhat difficult for me to pronounce the last name, it's Loquio. In the Loquio case, they addressed the mistake of fact instruction and when it should be given. And at, let's see, what's the page number? I don't have the actual, let's see.
In Loquio, though, I'm not sure how you pronounce it either, but didn't Mr. Loquio basically say, I didn't know I had a...
That's correct. Right, that's right.
In this case, Mr. Mika said he did know he had a meth pipe.
That's correct, he did. But the distinguishing part of this is that he knows he has a pipe. The question comes in, what is the intent? Because that is really what the distinguishing factor is in this. As opposed to...
a mistake of fact, though, does it? I mean, he testified in terms of what his intent was, and obviously the jury didn't believe him.
Well, it's because the jury wasn't given the proper instruction to consider, because then what happens is that once you set forth and give that instruction, the burden then shifts on the prosecution to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that he did not intend to use it. So in this particular case, we know that Mika was taken in. He was subjected to interrogation on a separate matter. Based on his answers, he was then booked. And in the course of the booking, he reached into his pocket and he produced the pipe. It wasn't as if anything that he didn't know. The question here was that Mr. Mika, as he testified to, is that he was driving his car to meet his brother at the 7-Eleven. In the course of driving, he heard this thing rattling around, discovered this pipe, put it in his pocket, and he had intended to confront his brother with this pipe.
Where's the mistake of fact?
Well, the mistake of fact comes in to the intent. What was his intent in using, was it his intent that he was using this pipe? Because the problem here is that we have the testimony from his girlfriend who comes in and says, he's not a user. I know users when I see them. He doesn't use. Mr. Mika says, I don't use.
How is Loquio helpful to you?
Well, Loquio's helpful to me because the question with the paraphernalia is that the prosecution has to prove the intent to use the paraphernalia.
But how? I don't understand how that goes to a mistake of fact jury instruction.
Well, the mistake of fact is that I didn't intend to use the pipe. In other words, that the mistake is that I didn't intend that the pipe wasn't mine, I wasn't intending to use it, so if there was a mistake, the mistake was my having it in my possession, thinking that since it's not mine, I'm going to be confronting somebody with that pipe. That's where the mistake comes in. My mistake is that I picked it up intending to confront somebody with it, knowing that it's not mine. So the mistake of fact comes in on that.
I agree it was a mistake.
But
I'm not sure if the same sort of mistake in Loquio.
Well, I somewhat think that it is, I mean, LaQuio said that, you know, gee, I have this pipe. I mean, obviously it's a pipe. It doesn't take a rocket scientist to figure out what this thing is. And he just says, you know, I didn't know what it was.
Well, Mr. Meek, I thought he testified that he knew that the pipe was used for smoking crystal methamphetamine, and that's why he was going to confront his brother.
That's correct. I mean, he knew that it was used for ingesting some form of...
Did he testify he didn't know that it had been used or didn't know that there was likely crystal meth residue in it? I mean, was there any testimony to that effect?
I don't recall that there was. I mean, in all candor, I really don't. Yeah. I really don't know.
Why don't you move to your motion to suppress?
Oh, well, and the motion to suppress, you know, what we have there is we have the police wanting to question Mr. Mika about some burglary that had occurred. Apparently, they had questioned him before. He had, you know, said that I was driving this vehicle. And we know that the vehicle was seen at a location where the burglary had occurred. So when the police want to find him, they go to a location where they know his family is, and they say, can you arrange for us to meet him? They get his brother to come in, call up Mr. Mika and say, Mr. Mika, can you meet us at the 7-Eleven? So Mr. Mika goes down to see his brother, and it's the same time he finds the pipe. He pulls up, and he goes into the store, whereupon he's confronted by essentially the crime reduction unit, for lack of a better term. He's confronted by an officer with, you know, bulletproof vest, firearms, along with a crew of about four other individuals who, you know, confront him, encircle him, and say, hey, we'd like you to come with us. There's really no question as you don't have to, but I would certainly seem to think that, you know, somebody that's confronted by essentially five individuals that are fairly large, trained in law enforcement, bulletproof vests, firearms, I don't really think that there's much of a question that I'm not doing anything other than coming along with you. So, you know, even though they may have said that, oh, gee, you don't have to do this, the circumstance is, I think when you're sort of surrounded by a group of individuals who vastly outnumber you, identifying themselves as law enforcement, I think that certainly at that point in time that there's a seizure of the individual. Because I don't think at that point in time he was clearly free to leave.
What relevance does it have that Mr. Mika testified that he voluntarily went with the officers?
Well, it has to do with the fact is that, of course, he voluntarily went with the officers because he really didn't have a choice to do otherwise. At that point in time, I mean, if they did not intend to take in Mr. Mika, why was there a need to have so many law enforcement officers dressed up in the way that they had to confront him to have him go in with them? If it was that, you know, if the circumstance was such that Mr. Mika was merely going to be asked to come with us, why not have a police officer and his partner come and say, hey, Mr. Mika, we want you to come in with us and answer questions.
So your argument, this is an unlawful seizure.
Yes.
And when did the seizure actually take place?
The actual seizure that took place is when the officers essentially confronted him and surrounded him and essentially prevented him from leaving. And what also underscores the voluntariness of it is what Mr. Mika asked them, well, you know, I'll voluntarily come with you, but I'd like to drive my car and follow you to the police station. And they say, no, you're not going to do that.
So
you're going to be transported.
So your authority is basically Kearns and Keenum.
Yes.
And certainly you're arguing that this is more coercive than a walk and talk.
That's correct.
And
because a walk and talk, remember, walk and talk only involved essentially two officers. You know, a guy gets off the airplane, he's got his bag, the officers walk up and say, you know, hi, we're HPD, and we'd like to talk with you about where you've been, where you're going, what you're doing, and what you have in your bag.
The standard of review is de novo, objective, reasonable man. So anything
yes.
he said afterwards, objective or not, didn't matter because the seizure already took place.
That's correct.
Okay. Now, if this motion to suppress should have been granted, why aren't you arguing sufficiency of evidence?
That's a good question.
I mean, you're asking us to vacate and remand. You're not asking us to reverse. You're not arguing insufficiency of evidence.
Right.
And under Maldonado, when we review sufficiency of evidence, it's without the evidence that should have been suppressed.
Right.
And without the ice pipe.
Well, there's no case.
Right. So why aren't you arguing that?
Well, I would like to argue that, obviously. It was something I didn't do, I have to admit. It wasn't, I was focusing more just on the issue of the, whether or not there was an adequacy of the suppression, and that from that, if the court were to rule.
So if we were to consider sufficiency of evidence, assuming that we thought the motion to suppress should have been granted, we'd have to do it under plain error.
Yes.
And that would mean, so why don't you argue under plain error, the test would be affect substantial rights of defendants and obvious. So can you explain to us how it would affect the substantial rights of defendant, or it's obvious because that's the standard we have to use?
Yes. Well, certainly if someone's Fourth Amendment rights are abridged, I think that it's obvious that anything that stems from that is should be suppressed because of the exclusionary rule. I mean, I would, I guess maybe I'm thinking of, it's obvious, it doesn't need to be addressed. If the court were to rule that this was an illegal seizure, certainly that from that point, anything that was obtained or gathered from that seizure would have been illegally obtained and therefore would not have been able to be used. Therefore, from that standpoint, the state would not have had any evidence to present at trial, and therefore there would not have been a case. At that point, you know, Mr. Mika was never formally charged with the burglary that he was actually taken in for. The state felt that they had a case. I mean, they could have charged him with a burglary, but from that standpoint, with the discovery, you know, with the arrest and everything that came from that, essentially there wouldn't have been anything to arrest him for. I mean, if the court would have granted the suppression on the illegal seizure, the court would have had to have applied the exclusionary rule, which would have meant there wouldn't have been anything at that point as a result of the seizure, you know, a statement was made. If the statement didn't come in, then they wouldn't have had the ability or they wouldn't have had the PC to make the arrest for the burglary. Upon not making the arrest for the burglary, the discovery of the pipe would not have been found. So it just follows along the line. Well, I would just say that in this particular case, the giving of the jury instruction, I think, I mean, aside from the seizure, which I think is that clearly there was not a question about whether Mr. Mika was going to be going with the police officers, whether he had an actual choice. I mean, it's sort of like you're surrounded, you're coming with us, and it's like, well, no, I'm not. Well, what happens at that point? I mean, we can only surmise. With five officers, firearms, and everything else, I don't think he had a choice. With regard to the jury instruction.
Counsel, but he did have a choice to answer the prosecutor's question differently when he was asked if he was willing to come along. And he said yes. He could have said no, but I felt I had to. That would have been the distinction you're drawing, and that's what you say the fact is. But that's not what he said. He said yes, I was willing to go.
Well, right, he's willing to go, but I'd ask you, if you're surrounded by a group of individuals, law enforcement officers, I mean, what is your normal response going to be?
Well, what we're talking about is the answer he gave in court to the prosecutor's question, and my answer is not really relevant at that point, but so in court he said yes, he was willing to go.
Mm-hmm. Well, like I said, at that point, yes, he was, but again, the question is what was his choice? Because, like I said, when he did say he was willing to go, and if this was a non-confrontational, non-custodial form of interrogation, and he was free to do whatever he wanted to do, then why didn't law enforcement allow him to drive his car to the police station for the interview?
Well, even that's a matter of some disagreement. My understanding or recollection is the prosecutor presents evidence to the contrary there. The detective testifies that, no, he didn't say that he wanted to drive his own car. No, we didn't say that he couldn't. Whereas your client testified, yes, that was the case.
Yeah. So from my client's standpoint, that's what he says. So there's a disagreement in terms of what the officers say would happen and what Mr. Mika says. I will take the side from what Mr. Mika says, obviously, because I represent him.
Sure. In Kearns, I'm reading a passage. It says, accordingly, we hold that a person is seized for purposes of Article 1, Section 7 of the Hawaii Constitution when a police officer approaches that person for the express or implied purpose of investigating him or her for possible criminal violation and begins to ask for information. So essentially it would be your position that once this happened, as opposed to asking for information, asking for him to go, the seizure took place, and what he said afterwards isn't really relevant.
Yes. Because remember, they didn't just pull Mr. Mika aside, and I think that's even the greater distinction that Mr. Mika has with the Kearns line, is that when they pulled Mr. Mika in, they had already known what they wanted to talk to him about. He was already a suspect in an ongoing investigation. So it wasn't as if this was just a random encounter just to see what you've got, let me look in your bag. This was an actual request for somebody that was the target of an investigation. And since my yellow light is on, the only thing to say is that with the pipe, the distinction is that the burden on the pipe has to be that the state has to prove beyond a reasonable doubt that the defendant had intended to use the pipe to ingest the controlled substance, and that's why when Mr. Mika and his girlfriend testified that it wasn't my pipe, I wasn't going to use it, that is the salient distinction.
Thank you, Mr. Grant.
Thank you.
Mr. Vincent.
Good morning. May it please the Court. Deputy Prosecuting Attorney Brian Vincent on behalf of the State of Hawaii. Now, first of all, Mika had been down at the station one time before, and there's no question in that case whether or not he went down voluntarily. It's not disputed in this case. So I think there's almost a presumption that if he came down the first time, why wouldn't he come down the second time voluntarily?
Well, now, distinguish Kearns for me, because in all candor, Mr. Vincent, I find Kearns less coercive than I do the circumstances of this and the language in Kearns of when a seizure takes place. And
it's less coercive, but I think in this case you have more particularized reason why the officer approached Mika in this case. He was a suspect in an ongoing burglary investigation.
But doesn't that even make the seizure argument even more compelling? That they were investigating Mr. Mika, you know, that they did have individualized suspicion, that they did come in with a number of officers, they did have body armor, they identified themselves as police, and certainly it would appear to me the circumstances, he was less free to go than someone walking, you know, down a corridor of an airport, approached by one officer.
To answer that question correctly, I guess, I'm not conceding that this was a seizure or that it was an arrest, but I think that addressing your plain air question is that even if this was an arrest, he was taken down to the station and he was given his Miranda rights, and he voluntarily waived his Miranda rights and made the statements to the police officer that eventually led the police officer to arrest him.
Is that the fruit of the poisonous tree? I mean, assuming that there was an illegal seizure,
if you're going to say that, I think you have to argue that the seizure was so coercive that it completely tainted
Are there degrees of illegal seizure? Isn't it just legal or illegal? And if it's illegal, it's fruit of the poisonous tree. We have degrees of illegal seizure.
Well, I think that the officers, I would argue that the officers had probable cause in this case to bring him down to the station anyway. Now, they didn't argue that, and the court never reached that issue.
They could have gotten a warrant.
Well, I think that they...
Then we wouldn't be here.
I think they had a probable cause.
Why didn't
to just arrest him. In any case, I would just argue that it's not a seizure in any case, because if you look at his testimony on cross-examination, Deputy Prosecutor asked him, were you willing to come in, weren't you? Yes. In fact, they let you go back into the store to get your cell phone minutes you were buying. Yes. And then you walked back out, and they didn't throw you in the car, no. They didn't physically restrain you in any way, no. Other than he says that they patted him down, right? Yes. And So I agree that he's prevaricating. He's saying this, then he's saying, I didn't feel.
Now, the standard of review is objective, reasonable man de novo on whether or not there's a seizure, right?
That's correct. But I think that you have to factor in credibility on the stand. And I think that the trial court judge is the ultimate arbitrator of credibility in this case, because he has an opportunity to personally see the Mika's demeanor when he was in the stand, and to evaluate his credibility as opposed to the officer's credibility. And of course, the officers presented an entirely different picture. And they said they never touched him.
But that's not what Kearns is saying and Keno is saying, right? How we review it.
I don't think this is a Keno type of case, Your Honor. To be frank, Keno is a case where people are coming off an airplane and they're being selected randomly because of the flight they came off of, and because of what the officer perceives.
Is that less coercive?
I think it gives them less cause to come and approach them. But in this case,
less coercive to the person being approached as opposed to Mr. Mika.
Well, ultimately, my position and the state's position is that this is a matter of credibility.
Let me ask you this, Mr. Vincent. Assuming for a moment that the motion to suppress shouldn't have been granted, Mr. Grona has not argued sufficiency of evidence. Do you have anything to say, assuming that we were to hold that the motion to suppress should have been granted, whether or not we should, by plain error, deal with the sufficiency of evidence question?
Well,
does it make a difference?
The drugs would not have been covered if he had not been arrested. And he would not have been arrested if he had not made the statement.
Yeah, if we were to hold that the motion to suppress should have been granted, we don't deal with the sufficiency of evidence, we vacate and we remand. Presumably, if there is some other evidence, as opposed to reverse, the game over.
I guess I'm not aware of any evidence that would suggest that there was inevitable discovery.
It wouldn't make a practical difference.
Yeah. I mean, if this court suppressed the evidence, then I would presume that the trial court would
dismiss anyway.
Dismiss, yes, Your Honor. As far as I recollect from looking through the facts. Anyway, my position on that is this is a credibility matter, okay? And
your authority for that credibility?
Well,
as the credibility counsel, though, if we're just talking about the evidence to which both sides conceded, then it's not a matter of credibility, right?
Well, there's a difference between the police's story and the defendant's story. I think that you have to go with the police's story here.
But where's your authority? I mean, I'm looking at Kearns. And Kearns is saying reasonable man standard, you know, all the circumstances, de novo review. You're saying it's subjective, the intent of Mr. Mika.
Well,
so if you could just cite your case for me.
If it's a reasonable person, I guess we'd have to say, where you or I have felt compelled to go down with the police officers to the police station. I don't think I would have felt compelled to go down there.
With that? Okay.
But, I think most reasonable people wouldn't have felt compelled to go down there. That's my position in any case.
Okay.
with respect to the jury instruction, the mistake of fact jury instruction, defendant's story is that he just had it to confront his brother with it, right? But that's not what the jury found. The jury found, because it's an element of the crime, right, that the defendant used or possessed an object with the intent to use it or to inhale or otherwise introduce in the body a controlled substance. So the jury found that they didn't believe his story. They believed that he had the pipe in order to smoke meth with it, okay?
And if you put in your answering brief, this is not a LaQuio case. This is not a mistake of fact.
That's correct.
As far
that's
as correct. The pipe is concerned.
Mm-hmm. That's correct. And LaQuio, he said he didn't know what it was. He'd never seen one before. In this case, he said he knew what it was. And that's why, and that's the story, that he was going to confront his brother with it, because he was angry with his brother. Okay. Again, the jury didn't believe that. So I don't see how mistake of fact instruction is warranted here. Generally, ignorance of law is no mistake. So he's saying that he has this defense that he was going to use it for another purpose other than, what society would consider would be a bad use of it. Okay, but that's not what the law says. The law says that you can't possess it, regardless of how you intend to use it. Okay, that's if you have any more questions. Okay, yeah, thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Benson. Any rebuttal, Mr. Corona?
Just briefly.
Turning to the mistake of fact is just, looking at the statute is that, in Mika's mind, I think that if we were to follow along with Mr. Mika, his ignorance or mistake came from the standpoint that it wasn't my pipe. I did not intend to use it. I did not intend to ingest anything with it, and therefore, I think that if we look at the statutory scheme of ignorance, which is HRS 702.218, and in 218.2, when it says the law defined the offense or law related, provides that the state of mind established by such ignorance or mistake constitutes a defense.
If we were to hold that the motion to suppress should have been granted, we don't even have to get
there. We don't even get there. That's true. That's true. And in response, like I said, Mr. Mika was the target of an ongoing investigation, and the court pointed out, if he was such a prime suspect, why not get an arrest warrant? I mean, at that point, certainly they had enough information they could have made an arrest of him. They had garnered information from individuals that were at the scene of the crime that put Mr. Mika at the scene of the crime. The only way that they were able to actually make the arrest of him is based on the fact that they were able to obtain a confession from him. So, the manner in which they went about getting him, I think, is what we get into the Kearns issue, and I think, as the court points out, in this case it was even more egregious because he was the target of investigation. He was confronted by a number of police officers, armed, and I don't think there was any question about whether Mr. Mika was going to be going with him voluntarily or otherwise. So with that, I would submit. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Greiner. Thank you, Mr. Benson. Nothing further. We'll take the matter under advisement. Court stands adjourned. Thank you very much.